This podcast is brought to you by Amusement Warehouse Magazine, the industry's largest trade publication. We cover amusement parks, carnivals, fairs, festivals, history, safety columns. We really got it all when it comes to the amusement business. Only remaining print publication in the amusement industry on a regular basis. So if you're interested in what the amusement industry has to offer, subscribe today. You can subscribe by logging on to amusementwarehouse.com, carnivalwarehouse.com, or amusementparkwarehouse.com. Jeremy, welcome. Thanks so much for coming on, taking some time.
Good to be with you. Always good to talk about warm weather things in the middle of winter, for sure.
So. That's right. Head to Florida quick. They should have all the zone meetings in Florida, I always say.
Yeah, I'm sure it would help attendance, for sure, yeah.
I'm going up to New York for the show in a couple of weeks. I always tell Mark over there, I was like, you know, you guys really should hold your convention in Florida. It'd be much more palatable when you do the thing. But we'll see what happens. So, 1 year under your belt at the Iowa State Fair, huh? This year, and it's been your lifelong dream to be there. I mean, tell us a little. I mean, I've read how you started out there, and you stalked basically Marion Lucas for years, and got a little job here and there, and got a ride on a golf cart, and did all those things. But tell us how you achieved your goal and clawed your way to the top there.
Yeah, well, yeah, thanks, Ron. Yeah, you know, it's an interesting story. You know, like many Iowans, grew up in love with the Iowa State Fair. Grew up also the son of a county fair board president, so always been involved in fairs my whole life. But yeah, one of those school assignments, what do you want to be when you grow up, you know, led to a letter that was sent to then Iowa State Fair CEO Marion Lucas. Began a relationship with him, a friendship that led to a job when I was 17 here at the Iowa State Fair, and spent many summers here at the Iowa State Fair through high school, college, and even I taught school right out of college, so I got to keep my summer job here, and left education, some time at the Missouri State Fair, then 12 years in Spencer at the Clay County Fair in Northwest Iowa, and then the chance to come back home here as CEO of the Iowa State Fair. So childhood dreams do come true, that's for sure. So, yeah.
Well, you summed up your whole life, so I guess we're done now. Just kidding. what kind of jobs were you doing when you were when you first went there? You just kind of jack up. That's what the neat thing about the fair is there, you know, it's not like a big corporation where you, people have like set little duties so they can just, hey, go clean up the barn, or hey, you know, the president or the governor of Iowa is coming over, go meet him, you know, so you could go really high or really low, depending on the day. Was it the same experience for you?
Yeah, it was. You know, my opportunity here at the Iowa State Fair started in the special events department, which dealt a lot with our free entertainment stages, but, you know, all sorts of things involved with that. You know, the rubber chicken throwing contest is a big thing here at the Iowa State Fair, the cow chip throwing contest. You know, all those types of contests and events, free stages. Yeah, put out signs. I've been the fair mascot in the parade, done a lot of different things here at the Iowa State Fair. You know, it's kind of used and abused, for lack of better words, I guess, when you're a summer employee, high school and college. Other duties as assigned is a pretty big list, for sure.
I love that. I mean, at least I did, you know, when I was growing up. If I had a job where I could just kind of spread my wings and do anything and learn things, I was over the moon, because I just love the challenge of a different little thing every day and doing something different. And you sound like you're kind of the same person with that.
You know, and there was such a seasoned staff here at the Iowa State Fair at that time. You know, of course, Marion Lucas was the CEO here, but Jan Higgins was the assistant manager. And, you know, Jan spent 30 years here at the Iowa State Fair. Kathy Swift in the marketing, you know, some major names in our industry that had dedicated their careers to the Iowa State Fair. So good learning opportunities, for sure, for a young guy that thought he might maybe someday want to be a fair manager, for sure.
What was like the most instructive job or experience you had to do when you were in that sort of jack of all trades phase?
You know, a story that stands out to me was just the importance of being accurate. And I remember I was in charge of doing some signs for some of our entertainment and attractions here at the fair. And there were some times not right on those signs. And that was a learning opportunity, proofread, double check, because, again, when somebody's coming to the fair, they're coming to have a good time, have an enjoyable time. And you need to make sure all the details are correct, so they have the best day possible, for sure.
Yeah, correct. And also, you got to put yourself in their shoes. I've made many a sign or many a thing where it made complete sense to me and all my staff, but I realized the customer has no idea that I'm referring to whatever landmark you might have or whatever thing you might have. And so the poor customer has no idea what the heck I was talking about, but it made complete sense to me, and everybody around me, they knew what to do. But you got to really, I don't want to say dumb yourself down, because that has nothing to do with dumb or smart. It just has to do with, the lived experience you have, and you got to put yourself as a person who's not been there or not familiar, and they have to experience through those eyes.
I think that's a challenge. That's a challenge for us in the fair industry when you think about it. We live and breathe this, those of us that work at fairs, year round. We know exactly where every small location is on our fairgrounds. We understand, we've spent hours agonizing and sweating over a decision to make a change. And because of that, you're right, Ron, we forget that many of our fairgoers and guests, they come here one day a year or a couple times a year.
Just go to gate one. Where's gate one? I don't know.
Exactly. We've had those same conversations here at the Iowa State Fair. We tell you where all of our gates are when you come to enter the fair. But once you get inside and want to leave, we have no signage telling you on the backside that is gate one, just little things. But I think that's in our industry is really having to put yourself in the fairgoer shoes, because they really aren't thinking about it as much as we are, for sure.
Yeah. Reading, even like you said, signs or instructions sometimes it boggles my mind, the interpretation that somebody will come up with. You put a promotion or a simple buy one, get one free, and they somehow make that sound something else, completely. I mean, so, at some point you got to decide and go with what's, going to be familiar with 99% of the people, because you always have to make a choice. But it's amazing. I remember when I was on the Carnival side of things, they were at a fair in northern New York, right on the Canadian border. They would have a promotion, and they would take the Canadian money at par. It was when the Canadian money was worth more, I guess.
Sure. So
they would convert it to American to buy a wristband or something like that. Say Canadian par. And then I was in the office, and the guy told me, one guy had come with a bag of money, and he wanted to trade it for par. And he's like, well, it doesn't say anywhere on this coupon that it says we take Canadian money to par. So it was like it was a bank exchange, and, who would have thought of that, but that guy did. So it's always interesting where they get these ideas or what they read and what you don't see,
when you're right. Playing. Yeah. Yeah. Everything is open for interpretation. That's for sure. So,
so when you stopped your little, summer intern, ongoing internship type thing at the fair, then that's when you became a teacher. You were just getting into college and doing your thing. And
Yeah, exactly. I, enjoyed my summer. I always tell people I enjoyed my summer job so much I needed to find a career where I could still, keep my summers for here. And so spent several years teaching high school English and coaching, which, skills still used to this day, learned.
What'd you coach?
I coached boys and girls high school track, and then I spent 6 years as a head girls basketball coach. So, everything you need to know about getting people to work together to achieve a common goal, dealing with parents, standing in front of high school kids every day. It's a humbling experience for sure, but lots of great skills learned that I still use for sure.
I actually coach a couple of girls' high school tennis teams still. And, I guess I'm getting old, because I make some reference to the Beatles or something, and they stare at me like I fell off of Mars or something like that. I said, how can you not know the Beatles? What are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about.
I always tell people, I've never had, standing in front of at a board meeting and presenting, or presenting at a staff meeting, those types of things. No audience nearly as critical, you know, as a sophomore English class. They are not impressed by anything. And so you have to work really hard to get your point across, for sure.
That's awesome. So I guess the teaching and the coaching really helped you, informed you in the business that you're in a little bit, and gave you some skills that you can, you know, certainly use now that you're working.
Yeah, you know, it ultimately comes down to most of life is really about the people business, right? You know, I mean, it's really about being able to communicate with people, communicate effectively, and being able to lead a team. And so, yeah, you know, some of the best, I guess, business experience, you could say, in that way, I learned really, you know, in a classroom setting, and definitely still pays dividends off, because ultimately that really is, you can have all the great ideas in the world, but if you can't communicate them, you know, if you can't get people to buy into them, they're just really not going to go anywhere.
So you're teaching, and that Mary Lucas dragged you out of there too, to another job at the Missouri State Fair as a fundraiser, sort of working for the foundation. How'd that come about? You kept in touch, I guess.
Yeah. You know, Marion and I had kept in touch, obviously. You know, he retired from the Iowa State Fair. And then after a little time in retirement, went back to actually work at the Missouri State Fair. And so during his tenure there, needed some assistance, and then ultimately ended up, you know, leaving education to lead the foundation for the Missouri State Fair. Obviously, you know, in our industry, many fairs have set up pretty successful foundations to help raise funds. Whether that's for scholarships or for, in our case here in Iowa, and as was the case at Missouri as well, capital improvements. And so spent a little bit of time in that world, but learned quickly I was not a fundraiser.
It's a tough job being a fundraiser. It's a tough
job. Yeah, definitely not a fundraiser at all. So
asking people for money. My first job, I worked for the Leukemia Society doing fundraising. And I just, that's actually how I got into this, was I ran special events instead. Because I was just so tired of begging people to do something they didn't want to do. Like, oh, do you want to be a celebrity waiter? And you have to get 10 people to sit at your table and pay money. I was like, oh, who wants to do that? And then I, you know, just running an event. I ran like a after work party with beer and music. I was like, oh, the people are happy to give me money. You know, it's like, it was great. You know, so it was a big difference than just begging people for money. So it is a wonderful business. It's pretty neat, the impact you have on people. So from there you go to Clay County. That was a pretty good leap. I mean, you had, you know, that's a big fair, and you got managerial experience and everything else. So you must have sold them pretty well with where you came from. Pulled on internship things you did.
Yeah, you know, obviously, yeah, the strong background, you know, at the Iowa State Fair as a summer employee, and that time at the Missouri State Fair. Yeah, you know, 12 years, you know, a fair, there's always a sense of expectation when you go to a fair that bills itself as the world's greatest county fair. But, you know, the Clay County Fair obviously picked that title up back in the 1920s, 1930s, when it really was one of the largest county fairs in the United States. But still an incredible
event. In your county, did Jessica try to sue you for that name or no?
Yeah, right. Yeah, Jess and I used to talk about that a lot when I was at the Clay County Fair. But, you know, such a unique event. If you've ever been there, you know, it's a fair of about 300,000 people over a 9-day run in Spencer, Iowa. And Spencer, Iowa's population, about 12,000. So
they're always really close to the top 50 list. I always get their number, but it doesn't usually quite make it. But it's right near there.
Yeah, you know, you look at, again, that fair, you know, again, 300,000, though, in a town of 12,000 people, it truly was such a regional draw. Still the largest farm machinery show, you know, any fair. You know, companies like John Deere and Case still have a presence at the Clay County Fair, obviously right in the heart of a farming country. And just a really great place to be for those 12 years.
Where do the people come from? You have 12,000. Yeah. They just keep coming over and over again, or they?
Yeah, you know, a lot of repeat guests. It's a big draw, you know. Really, the largest, if you want to call it, metropolitan area to Spencer is about 90 miles away, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. But really, if you draw about 100-mile radius all around Spencer, those people just come to the fair. And so, a great tradition. Again, huge livestock shows, kind of the classic fair. Of course, our carnival there, Gold Star Amusements, Mike Featherston was there with us at Clay County. And just a really neat event that I was fortunate to be part of.
And that's a great lesson to learn, because I think, you know, sometimes with pricing and things, we're forgetting a little bit, but the need for people to come multiple times is so important, at least to me. I used to work with this little fair in Union, South Carolina. And the guy, I mean, I think the population was like 12 people or something, but it was a pretty good little fair. And Daryl Wade was the manager. He's a great guy. But he used to always tell me, Ron, we got to get everybody to come every day. You know, and he'd price it. It was like ridiculous. It was his gate was like, you know, half of what any normal fair would be. And the carnival wristbands were like $8 or $10 or something crazy. But sure enough, they came every day. And he had a nice little attendance. By the end of the week, it was a good little fair, you know. So I've never forgotten that lesson. But, you know, I just worry sometimes now with the pricing, like, are people able to come multiple times? Are they able to, you know, just not even give it a second thought to go again? You know, it's like almost like you got to save up a little bit in some places to get there.
Yeah, you know, that really was our philosophy in Spencer, for sure, at the Clay County Fair. Yeah, we needed, you know, we had to have repeat visitors, you know, so whatever that looked like, you know, discount deals, as you mentioned, carnival deals, whatever we could do to drive that repeat attendance, we just had to, because geographically, you know, we were where we are, you know, in other words there. So, you know, there wasn't a huge metropolitan area. We were getting probably 90% of the, you know, surrounding population attending the fair, and we needed them to attend a couple times for sure.
Reach out. Yeah. That just stayed with me. I mean, this was early when I first got in the business, and it just stayed with me. Even if I'm in a big city, there's a fair, an event I'm running, and I'm driving outside, and I see people, I was like, why aren't they at my event? You know, why aren't they there? It's like, I'm kind of mad, or I'm wondering what the heck I'm doing wrong. You know, like, why don't they all come every day? You know, it was a good lesson to learn. It's always stayed with me, because you want to see people come, and you want to see them come over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also back to as fairs, you know, try to fill that void and really family entertainment as well. You know, you've got to make it affordable so those families can attend, you know, more than once. And then, and you're able to do that, then that really just builds that brand loyalty as well, that, you know, the fair becomes more than just a 1 day trip. It becomes a 3 or 4 day trip, you know, and for us, especially here in the Midwest, I think Clay County Fair is similar to us here at the Iowa State Fair. You know, you add in that component of people camping at the fair, you know, then that builds in that audience as well. Good. that they're here every day.
I worked a little bit with the DuQuoin State Fair years ago, and that's a little town too. The entire town, I think, moves onto the campground when they go. It's actually the largest. I think it's the largest fairgrounds in the United States. It's like, forget how many acres it is. It's like some ungodly amount of acres. There's like the guy used to own the Pepsi place has a house in the middle of it. But the entire town would just move onto the fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. It was, at least at the time, it was like a free gate. And it just amazed me what a sense of community it was. It was just the fair time, and you just moved to the fairgrounds basically during the fair.
Yeah, we saw that a lot in Spencer too, mainly because we needed so many, of course, as the fair, we needed employees, you know, to run admission gates and make the fair happen. But the Clay County Fair still has a really strong presence of local nonprofit groups operating food concessions, bingo concessions, you know, and they needed volunteers. So yeah, you know, life kind of shut down in Spencer the 9 days of the Clay County Fair, because everybody, to your point, was either camping at the fair or they were working or volunteering in some capacity at the fair. But it really took the whole community working together to make that fair happen. And still, you know, takes everybody to make it happen.
I love how focused you've been on the, and I, you know, I say this with all seriousness, focused on the Iowa State Fair. What really cracked me up was, you know, when you interviewed for the job at Clay County, you said, I'm not going to leave except if they offer me the job at the Iowa State Fair.
True. Yeah. True story. You know, again, was fortunate to understand the Clay County Fair is a tremendous, as you mentioned, you know, kind of just right below the top 50. And, you know, small town Iowa, I grew up here in Iowa. And so it was such a great place to you know, my wife and I to raise, well, two of our three sons were born in Spencer. And, you know, it's just such a wonderful fair. But yeah, from the very beginning, there was probably only one place that was going to take me away. And that was the opportunity to come here to Des Moines to the Iowa State Fair.
But you're saying this at the job interview, you're hoping to get the job. you had decent experience, but I mean, you weren't like a big fair manager at some other place. So no. I guess it was a little bit dicey. Am I going to get the job or not? And they ask you the question, you said, well, by the way, if I get the job at the Iowa State Fair, I have to leave and go there. That's a gutsy thing.
I think where that came from, of course, you know, to give the Clay County Fair credit, a very traditional county fair with a board, like most fair boards, that skewed a little older. And so obviously here they were interviewing this guy in his early 30s about this opportunity to come to Spencer. And I think the concern was, you know, are you just using this as a stepping, you know, are you going to be a one and done, or, you know, just going to be here a couple years and move on? And really, I wanted them to understand. I fully understood from the beginning how special the Clay County Fair was, but there was one place that probably had my heart a little more, for sure. So
I laughed for a while when I said that. I was like, well, I love you, but there's somebody I love a little more. So if she pays attention to me, I'm going there.
Right.
That's awesome.
Right.
That's really awesome. So I guess that eventually the opportunity presented itself to make your case. Did you have to interview and everything, or they just say, this guy's obsessed, we got to hire him?
Oh yeah, no, it was definitely a robust, you know, nationwide search, you know, that the Iowa State Fair went through, obviously looking to fill the shoes of a legend in our industry. You know, Gary Slater had been here for more than 20 years. And so, yeah, it was definitely a robust search, lots of interviews and all those types of things, but in the end, to be able to get the position here, so.
That's great. And along the way, you became the chairman? They always rotate these titles of the IFE.
Yeah,
Marla's like president and CEO, so that must be the chairman or something.
Yeah, I was chairman of the board in 22, which was actually my last year in Spencer. So I was chairman while I was at the Clay County Fair. That term ended in November, of course, this time of year in 2022. And then I started at the Iowa State Fair in 2023. So
at Clay County, when you went there, what did you, you know, what were your focuses? What did you think needed to be improved? What needed to be changed? What was your agenda for what you're going to do? And were you keeping notes on the Iowa State Fair the whole time, just in case they called?
I was pretty focused in Spencer, but obviously a close connection, even the whole time I was in Spencer with the Iowa State Fair and with Gary, obviously as the two largest fairs in the state. But I really think the thing I probably developed a deep sense of in Spencer was really the need for the guest experience. And I brought that with me to Des Moines, and really the guest experience, really, when it comes right down to it, no matter what you do at your fair, no matter how much you spend on entertainment, no matter how big your carnival is, no matter how many commercial vendors you have, no matter how many foods on a stick you have, the fair goer wants easy access to the parking lots. They want a clean fairgrounds, and they want clean bathrooms. And they want a place to sit down. If you can do those four things, I'm convinced people are going to love your fair. And so,
that entertainment at that point.
Yeah, because it takes care of itself. You know, it improves the length of stay. And so, you know, we invested a lot of money in Spencer on benches and picnic tables for people to sit down, remodeled restrooms. You know, back to signage we talked about at the beginning. You know, I think sometimes at our fairs, we assume that the same people come every year, and we don't think about those first time fair goers. And so just how do we make that experience better for them? And really, you know, that really is what I focused on the whole time in Spencer. And we saw huge growth in terms of length of stay, fair goer spending, and all those types of things. And we're honestly trying to replicate some of the things here. The most important purchase we made last year in a $3 million capital budget here at the Iowa State Fair was 50 more picnic tables. that we're just scattering out, and we're going to do the same thing this next year. You know, those are the things I think that really drive the fairgoer experience, just kind of those creature comforts.
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to, as people get older too, they want a place to sit down and hang out for a few minutes, and not, you know, it definitely adds hours to their stay. And that's a big, big improvement. People don't realize it, but some people don't realize, a lot of people do, but it's big. It's really big.
You know, I think in our industry, you've got kind of two camps, maybe, I don't know, two schools of thought. You know, you've got some places that are just trying to wedge, you know, maximize every square inch of real estate and wedge everything in that they can. And then I like green space. It's okay to have some space between concession stands. It's okay to have take a booth space in a building and turn it into a seating area. You know, it's okay. I think through COVID, especially, people like that sense to be able to spread out a little bit. You know, we're blessed here in the Midwest. Many of us in the Midwest are blessed with these huge fairgrounds with trees and grass, and that really are parks. And we need to utilize them a little more as parks. And again, you improve the guest experience, you're going to stay longer. The money in the end will take care of itself for sure.
Absolutely. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned, COVID you know, when we came back from it, or the first year, did you guys ran in 2021?
Correct. Yep. Yeah.
So, I was telling a lot of people, I run a fair up in, New York, a county fair up there. And, you know, we were talking about it. I said, you know, we're going to have people that have never been to the fair before or haven't been for years. So we got to really do everything we can to have a great experience, because we got like a once in a lifetime opportunity to grab people that, you know, maybe became jaded over the years, or maybe had a bad experience or whatever else, to grab them and come back. And I think a lot of fairs, you know, people were experiencing it for the first time in a long time. And hopefully a lot of them did great things to keep them.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I think we came back from COVID, a viable option because they were outdoors. You know, I think that was really important for a while. And then I think when you look across the industry, and, you know, your numbers probably show doing the top 50 list, but, you know, a lot of fairs are definitely back to those pre-pandemic levels, if not ahead of them. And I think you're right. I think, Ron, we were able to capture those first timers and turn them into fairgoers. And I think you're seeing that across the industry. You know, obviously, as always, when weather cooperates, when you're blessed with good weather, but, you know, you're just seeing a lot of those fairs back to those pre-pandemic levels for sure.
Or higher in some cases. Yeah, they're
right. Yeah, we've seen that here at the Iowa State Fair for sure. You know, we were on a nice little kind of upward trajectory leading into COVID, you know, and then of course no fair in 20, and then kind of rebuilding, but definitely exceeding those here anyway, at the Iowa State Fair, exceeding those pre-pandemic levels.
That's great. I was actually reading a history book for an interview I did a month or two ago. And it was about Conklin shows, but you know, when I was reading about the industry, like during the war, let's say, I was looking at the parallels between then and COVID, like supply chain issues and people couldn't do, you know, whatever. And fairs didn't run. Minnesota didn't run. I'm sure you didn't run.
Right.
And then, but when they came back, the numbers went up and they stayed up, you know, because I was like thinking, okay, we had a huge year in 2021. Is this going to stop? I was wondering when it was going to stop. But that gave me a lot of, because usually things repeat themselves, they're cyclical. So I was like, well, that's interesting, because that's like a you know, a dynamic or game changing thing. It brings new people, and hopefully they'll stay for a long time and stay forever or whatever.
You're right. Almost like leveled up to a new plateau.
That's going to keep and not like waiting for the shoe to drop. Although right. I do worry a little bit about pricing. I don't know. Might be a worry wart, but it just seems like things are so expensive. Even the food, you know, you go, I mean, it's more to buy a, you know, a gyro than it is to get into a fair sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, is that really, how long can we sustain that, you know, or wristband prices or whatever it might be, they're getting up there, but maybe that's changed too. And maybe people just have more money or more disposable. I don't know, you know, but it doesn't make me nervous a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Ron. I think those conversations, you know, we've had a lot internally here at the Iowa State Fair. You know, will there be a tipping point, you know, for a lot of different things? I know our job, I feel like here at the Iowa State Fair this next year, especially, you know, we're holding the line on all costs. We're not raising admission, not raising anything, just to kind of hold the line a little bit and see, yeah, where exactly all this is going to settle out. Back to that, we seem to have leveled up to a new plateau, but is that really going to be sustainable? And I think that's a question, you know, all of us in the industry are probably asking for sure.
And you see it a little bit with the promotions. If you run a promotion and all of a sudden you get this huge response to a dollar day or whatever, BOGO night, you know, you say, the price elasticity is really sensitive, you know, they're mm-hmm. really responding to a promotion. So I wonder, and then are we getting where, you know, well, I was in the middle of summer, but I'm talking about the industry in general. Are we getting to where, you know, they can only afford to come on a Friday or a Saturday because it's worth it, you know, as opposed to the weekdays and things like that. But those are existential questions for the industry, I guess.
You know, I always tell people, you know, our industry though has faced those types of questions though for a long, I mean, we're still around, you know, I tell people all the time, people always ask, is the Iowa State Fair still relevant? And I always talk about the fact that we balance, you know, kind of tradition with the new things. But I always say we have to give ourselves a little bit of grace. We've been in existence for 171 years. And you look at, you know, many fairs, you know, been in existence on the East Coast almost 200 years. Well, you don't stay around for 200 years without kind of understanding your customer a little bit. And so I think we sometimes have to give ourselves a little bit of grace because there's a lot of businesses, a lot of industries that have not survived 200 years. And yet fairs in some ways are maybe more relevant and at some places stronger than ever before.
I agree with you. I'm not a naysayer when it comes to that stuff. When you went to Clay County, and I know you had, you know, some experience doing the little, but what were the biggest challenges? What areas of the fair did you have to really have the biggest learning curve on?
You know, I think really for me, I had a little bit of experience in the entertainment world, you know, when I was at the through the summer job. So a little touch of that. But, you know, really for us at Clay County, similar to the Iowa State Fair, the bigger grandstand concerts are a big part. So, you know, how does that work in today's world? Obviously, as those prices continue to go up. And then, you know, the Clay County Fair, you know, such a strong agricultural fair too. So, you know, even though I grew up in small town Iowa, you know, definitely lots of learning on the livestock end of things with our livestock competitions and those types of things. So always something to learn. I've been fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of people smarter than me who I consider mentors, Jerry Hammer, Marlene Pearson Jolliffe, even some colleagues of similar age, Jess Underberg being one of those as well, that always willing and able to pass on knowledge for sure.
Jerry Hammer. Yeah. When you went to the Iowa State Fair, you're there. What I read, and it's probably a really prudent thing to do this year, you kind of were just sort of watchful and, you know, it's a well-oiled machine, so it pretty much was doing what it was going to do. And you just were watching, taking notes, figuring out what your agenda is going to be for the future. Was that the approach you took?
Yeah, you know, 100%. Again, as I mentioned, Iowa State Fair has been around for 170 years, so it's just fine. You know, it's operating just fine. So
I could screw it up really good, and it'll still be there.
Yeah, exactly. So my job was to not screw it up, you know, but was to really just sit back, watch, observe. And obviously, as with any organization, always a chance to do things better and make improvements. And that's the road we're going to head down. But really, at first, just to watch, you know, the staff operate, really see how some things really were done here. From all perspectives, really learn, you know, watch, learn, and observe. And then we've always got time in the future to make those changes.
Absolutely. So what are some of the items on your agenda for change?
Yeah, well, I really think for us, I talked about earlier that creature comfort piece. Again, we need more places for people to sit here at the Iowa State Fair. We need to improve our wayfinding signage to help people get around the ground. So creature comforts are going to be important. I think the other thing for us, especially here at Iowa, is really protecting our agricultural core, whether that's through livestock competitions, Or through just ag education in general. You know, even in Iowa, we have to educate people where their food comes from. And we want to make sure we use our platform to do that to the best of our ability. I think those are probably the two biggest things. Expanding the guest services, the creature comforts, and then protecting that ag core for sure.
Yeah, when you're talking about agriculture, that's a thing that's kind of been on my mind for years. I don't have a big agricultural background. I grew up in New Jersey, so I don't even know if we had a state fair when I was there. At least we had something in name only. I think the Hammonds ran it actually. But you know, I talked to Marla about it not too long ago, and surprisingly, she agreed with me on something because she usually tells me I'm wrong. But when I go, and I've gone to a billion of those livestock competitions over the years, I have no idea what's going on, and they don't explain it to you. And I want to learn. I want to understand. But I feel like I'm a Martian that dropped down. I'm watching a basketball game. I don't know if they're looking for a fuzzy tail or for whatever they happen to be looking for. But I think that's a way, and you guys may do it. I'm sure there's some fairs that do it. But, you know, having that knowledge for those people that just happen to be sitting there, I think would be an awesome, improvement for some fairs, because by and large, you don't learn much at all about it. And I would love to learn. I'd love to know what they're looking for. But, I was watching the dog show, the American Kennel Club on the after Thanksgiving parade, and they were explaining, because I was thinking how similar that might be, but they were explaining, oh, they're looking for this or looking for that. But, some of that in the agricultural competitions, I think would be awesome to just learn about some stuff that I'm curious to learn about.
Yeah. You're right on the right track. You know, we talk about that a lot, that some of the purely agricultural components of our fair, that really the fair was based on these livestock competitions, we're not using them to their full, to the lack of better words, their full ability to also teach people about agriculture. And we have to bridge that gap. And really those livestock shows, it really one area of, I think, fairs in general that we have not yet really fully exploited for the educational piece of that as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got animals in a ring, you've got bleachers. I mean, right? It's a show. But we do very little to tell you what it is exactly.
What the rules of the game are.
right. Yeah. You don't know what show you're watching. That's for sure. Yeah.
Or what they're looking for. I mean, I think this dog looks fine or this pig looks fine, but it loses. I was like, why did my pig lose? I like that pig. It was a good pig. But, and from a marketing head, you know, I wonder if you can't make like little mini celebrities out of some of the animals, you know, as they compete over the days, and would people go back and see them, you know, the Stinky the pig or whatever, and he's winning, and he did great against this guy. I don't know, maybe it would be something. Maybe I'm crazy too, but
no, I think it's all things for us to think about, you know, as we continue back to that relevant piece, right? You know, fairs, you know, taking that, how do we take this traditional part of a fair, a livestock show, and keep it relevant for today's audience that mm-hmm. is not understanding what's going on? And that's there are a lot of smart people in our industry. And I'm sure there are some fairs that are already, you know, light years ahead of others in that very thing.
Well, it's tough too, because it's like its own world. I live in Virginia now, and there was a fair I can think of that had a strong 4-H thing. And I happened to wander into one of the barns, and I felt like I was like, I had just crossed over into North Korea or something like that. Yeah. Like staring at like, what are you doing here? And I was like, I thought it was like the fair and I could come in and do stuff. But, they do have their own little world sometimes. They're very insular, and it's, I'm not saying everyone, but sometimes, you know, you get into that a lot, or you see that, you know, fairly often. And I know they want to protect their animals, and I know they want to do all those things, but, opening that up, because you do have a wonderful opportunity for people to see things and be around things for the first time. So it's a pretty cool thing, and I'd like to see some more of it, you know?
Yeah, you know, you do. You look at that. You know, lots of livestock competitions occur, but when those livestock competitions occur at the fair, you do have people that are kind of like you were just talking about bursting or breaking into that bubble a little bit. And so you know, how do we engage those exhibitors as well to teach our fairgoers about agriculture? That's something we talked a lot about at the Clay County Fair, and we're still talking about here as well. That they are part of the fair experience. They're there competing at the fair, but yet they're also there showcasing for all those people that are not right. involved in agriculture. So, yeah, it's as always, you know, people come to fairs. You know, I always say a family can come to a fair, four different ages, and their fair experience is vastly different you know, what they want. And that's what makes Fair so special. They're doing it together, but yet they're finding something to entertain themselves and educate themselves separately as well.
Yeah. It's really, I think it's an area that just could explode. It could really be a game changer for a lot of people that if they're, you know, and I don't know what the answer is. A lot of smart people out there that are more involved with things than I am, but I know there's some kernel of an idea there that could really be a cool thing to make it, you know, open to everyone and really interesting to everyone too. Not just open, you know, not just like learn. There used to be a guy that had a show, and he would have like a Wild West show, and he was like really into animals and stuff. And he'd come out with a new show every couple of years, and I was buying some entertainment. And Mike would go, it's an educational show. I said, Mike, when you say educational, I hear boring. So, you know, make something, make it exciting so the people are coming here. But who knows? Speaking of entertainment, with how are you doing with grandstand stuff? That's a tough gig right now for most places. Anyway, some places get lucky, but.
Yeah, we're in a pretty good spot here at the Iowa State Fair. We're fortunate, you know, one of the final projects that Gary Slater completed during his tenure here was really a renovation of the Iowa State Fair grandstand, increasing the capacity to, you know, more than 15,000, and really making it more of a true concert venue. And so that's helped us, you know, Jelly Roll, Eric Church, the Chicks, you know, all wow. have played here at the Iowa State Fair in the last couple years. So that really has allowed us to kind of maintain, you know, a niche. Again, but we face the same thing everybody else is facing as well. Increased competition, you know, whether it's from arenas or festivals or casinos, and just the increasing price. And you know, we're a traditional Midwest fair in the sense that, you know, every night is a concert, you know, ending in fireworks here, and it's a separate paid ticket from your fair admission. And so we're still able to do that model here, but definitely becoming a challenge as we continue to move forward.
So you're a hard ticket on most shows in the grandstand. Okay.
Yeah. All shows. Yep. Every night here is a hard ticketed show. And again, you know, we have some success here at the Iowa State Fair. Year, you know, we might sell 100,000, you know, grandstand hard tickets during the run of the fair. But again, when you step back and look at the big picture, that's about 10% of our fairgoers, you know, actually attend a concert. So it's just always that balance for us. Obviously, it's larger than 10% of the budget, you know, but it also checks a lot of other boxes in terms of expectation. And really, I think the grandstand concert is a way to hook that fairgoer who I would not call a every year fairgoer.
Yeah, you know, like you've got your people that person that's got to be there every year. Yeah,
right. The concert's going to hook somebody that maybe comes every 2 or 3 years, and it really is the concert that gets them in the gate.
Yeah, somebody I was interviewing told me they were like, yeah, you know, who's in the grandstand gets a lot of chatter. You know, gets a lot of talk about how good even you know, sort of tempers people's ideas of whether the fair is going to be good or not, just based upon who's, oh yeah, they're good this year. They have Jelly Roll, you know, or oh, it's no good. Or there's nobody I don't like, you know.
That is not the world as much I live in here, but 110% the world I lived in at the Clay County Fair in Spencer.
Oh, really?
You know, back to that, a community of 6,000 or 7,000, you know, 10,000 people welcoming 300,000 people in. That grandstand lineup was, like, to your point, was a source of civic pride. You know, that's the measurement of how good the fair is. You know, and you tell people, are you going to the concert? Well, no, but I just want to, you know, that just gives me the benchmark. And so
hear it. I was there when he played or something like that.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, and in Spencer, it all goes back to the mid 90s when they had, they were fortunate enough to book, Tim McGraw and Garth Brooks before they became big, and then they became big. So, you know, that you go back to that, you know, and so that's a real challenge. So I think for fairs in that niche, that's a hamster wheel you're caught on, where that grandstand entertainment is more about marketing and public perception of your event than it is about the concert itself.
Profit and loss too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but how do you re-educate your audience in if you want to get out of that? That the fair is still the same great fair, maybe just without the concert. It's a challenge it's a challenge for a lot of fairs in our industry.
It's funny you say that, because the fair I run in Orange County, New York, Orange County, back, it's a racetrack, but back in the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, we literally had like Metallica, Van Halen, yeah, huge names. And people to this day email, why don't you use Stink? We don't have, yep, Van Halen. I mean, it's like they have no clue what these acts cost then, nowadays, right, anyway. I mean, just have no perception whatsoever. They're like, why don't you just book them? I was like, okay, let me, you know, $4 or $5 million and I'll book them. No problem.
Right.
It's bigger than my fair budget. You know what I mean? One act.
Yeah.
It's incredible, but they do hold on to that perception of what should be there, and they want it. You know, it's like, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. What goes on. Yeah.
Post COVID too, a lot of the grounds acts have changed quite a bit too. I've been talking about that a little bit too. It's like, a lot of people stop touring and doing things, and especially animal acts have gone away quite a bit. And it's definitely been a little bit of a thinning out. There's a lot of the same, you know, acts that you see, and it's not quite as diverse as it used to be. Are you experiencing that?
Yeah, I think especially, you know, between COVID, I think COVID, obviously a lot of people had to leave the business, you know, because they could not work. I think it also sped up some people's retirement plans. And then I think especially you mentioned those animal acts that were kind of more of the educational nature. You know, I think the animal rights activists have finally got to a lot of them. But yeah, there definitely is a thinner pool, a shallower pool to choose from when you're looking at those acts. And hopefully, I would say that's probably just my opinion, probably one part of our business that is not back to that pre-COVID level is that level of associate, you know, a member in our fair trade associations that's providing those free entertainment pieces. Just not quite there yet for sure.
Yeah. It's still, and there's so many, I was told the story a couple of times, if I'm repeating myself, I'm sorry, but I was like at a restaurant and I was watching, there was some kind of, I was like at the bar and there was some kind of TV show on, and they were showing like videos of people that do stuff. And they were like, I saw like 5 or 6 acts that would be fantastic. So I don't know if anybody in the industry is looking, if the agents are looking, but I think there's things out there, but you know, that you got to develop an act and you got to do all those things. But I think there are opportunities. It's just, I don't know. It just seems like it's a lot of the same when you go, even last, you know, we're taping this just after the IFE convention. And there's a lot of the same. There's a lot of the same.
Right. Well, and I think you're right. It's, I think those acts are still there. They're just going other venues, you know, TV shows like America's Got Talent, you know, that type of thing. And we even talk about this switching from entertainment to competition at fairs. You know, through COVID, people really kind of went back to their roots, for lack of better words. You know, they were gardening more, they were baking more, they were quilting more, you know, all those types of things. And yet, I don't know if we ever successfully got people to understand that, well, you can enter and show those things.
Well, that's interesting.
You know, and so I was a part of a conversation actually at the IFE convention about that. You know, I look through my social media and it seems like everybody I know now bakes their own sourdough bread. You know, well are we?
My daughter does.
Are we? Just started. Have we made the connection with some of these younger people that are doing all these things that you can enter at the fair? You know, you can show that at the fair and get a chance for a ribbon and all those types of things. So, yeah, I mean, whether it's entertainment or those types of things, I think it's just making sure we're letting people know that, you know, fairs are viable outlets for that entertainment piece or that craft you enjoy doing, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. I think there is a great opportunity for that. If you can, you know, especially if people have never been in a competition before, I wonder if they have some self-doubt, like, I you know,
yeah,
how do I know if my bread's any good? You know, I bring it, are they going to laugh at me when I carry my stupid loaf over there? They're like, get out of here. This is no good. They have no reference point to be in a competition for bread. So how do they know if their bread's good enough? But, you know, just to be open to them, you know, that could be a great thing. That could be.
Yeah. I think definitely, again, always opportunities, always opportunities, you know, for growth, for sure.
Yeah. It's unlimited. You know, I was laughing too, when I was reading, excuse me, You were talking about off-season rentals and getting money, and you're saying what other industry, you know, only operates two weeks a year. Although I did think of one, NASCAR, I think, is the other one. They have 2 races a year,
right?
Giant facilities that they have, and then they have to rent them the other time, but that you're right. It's like one of the only ones to do it. And I was teasing, I think it was Jessica or somebody. I was like, how often do you get the question, what do you do the other 50 weeks of the year? You know, for what, because people have no idea that, you know, it's a year round job. It's a big thing, but keeping it rented, like you're saying, with the off season rentals is so important to have a healthy fair and have a healthy fairgrounds.
Well, you can't keep all your eggs in one basket. Yeah. And to that point, yeah, I've said many times, you know, go to a bank, tell them you want to open a business. You're going to be open 11 days a year, and you're going to do it outside. And, you know, so completely depend on the weather and see how much, you know, see how big the loan the bank will give you, you know? And so that, I mean, that's really what we do in the fair business. And so, anytime we can do, and we've been fortunate here, you know, the Blue Ribbon Foundation here at the Iowa State Fair has invested, you know, millions into the fairgrounds here. And so we've been able to turn some of our buildings into facilities that can be used on cold winter days like today. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and there are some fairs that are leaps and bounds ahead of us, you know, in terms of the ratio of their revenue between the actual fair event and what they're doing in the non-fair. But yeah, any revenue you can generate outside the fair really just protects you, you know, from having a rainy fair, for example, yeah. Or as we learned from COVID, not having one at all.
Diversification is important.
Yeah. So that diversification and spreading that revenue stream out throughout the year for cash flow purposes, but then also just to insulate yourself is really, really important.
Yeah. I had a bad event one year, my accountant, who, you know, wasn't that familiar with the industry that much, came in and he's like, what happened? I was like, well, I'm in a business that somebody else has the key to the door. They could just lock it and nobody can come in. There's nothing I could do. You know, it's like, it's all right. Over the thing. So it is dicey. It's a dicey, dicey business in some ways. Although, you know, if you really step back and look at the numbers, you don't almost ever see anybody down 50%. It, you know, over it's 10%, 20%. You have a bad year or you're up or you're close. You know, that I know, and I know it's a fear, and I know there's one time it could possibly happen in a long period of time, over a long, long period of time. But generally, this is the variable's only this much, because you really don't see fairs like, oh, I was off 75%. It just doesn't happen. You know, it's a.
Yeah. I think for us, you know, and I think some fairs, I know here in Iowa, we've mitigated that. You know, one way you mitigate that is we've invested in air conditioning in buildings. You know, that takes the really hot somewhat out of the equation. And then, you know, just as you make improvements, hard surfacing, you know, building improvements and stuff, that takes the rain a little bit out of the equation as well. Now, I understand that obviously that still affects out the true outdoor pieces, like the carnivals, you know, and the rides and stuff. But, you know, yeah, I think a lot of us have tried to put some things in place to still be an attractive destination, kind of regardless of what the weather is doing.
The carnival you just mentioned, you have an independent midway, a relatively new one actually, with what you're doing. How is that getting up to speed on all that? Because that wasn't there when you were there the first time, and it was there the second time, and it's quite the undertaking.
It is. You know, you mentioned earlier about, you know, what did I need to learn? Well, that's been the quickest kind of up to speed here at the Iowa State Fair, is just our independent midway operation with the thrill parks. And, you know, it is a challenge for sure. But it's a niche that we are kind of filling here in the upper Midwest with some neighboring fairs as well. And so, you know, it's just a challenge. I think more than anything gives me a little more insight when I'm talking to my friends from OABA about some of the challenges they go through, because we get it, you know, we understand it as well. And so, you know, again, just such a challenging time in our industry, from the fair side for our carnival partners, you know, and I know OABA has been doing a lot of things, but, you know, just from labor to just the shrinking number of carnivals, it is you know, it's something that we on the fair side need to make sure we're doing all we can to make sure we're building that partnership up with our carnival providers, whether that's a single provider or you know, multiple providers, in our case with an independent, but just making sure we're strong partners, because it is tough. It's a tough road right now in that industry for sure.
Yeah. A couple of good years of help, definitely, for sure, with the last post pandemic's been pretty good for the carnival industry in general. So when you went to interview at the Iowa State Fair, was there any caveat, well, I'm going to leave if I get this job, or no?
Well, you know, I'm fortunate. You know, the Iowa State Fair is 171 years old, and I am the 13th person to serve as secretary of the Iowa State Fair Board, as my official title is. So,
did one of them live a really long time or something?
Well, that means is
97 and still running it.
What that means is, I think if I don't screw it up, I get to stay a long time, and so. This is a great place to be. Unique situation, of course. My wife and I are three sons. You might be familiar. The Iowa State Fair is one of the few fairs left. We live here on the property.
That's pretty cool.
We have a house here on the fairgrounds, and so it's a great place to raise my family, for sure.
And I was talking to one of your board members. He says they lock the gate at night so you can't leave to go to another job. Is that true?
Yeah. I don't know about that for sure, but it's a great place to be, for sure.
So. The reason I was asking that is in the news lately, apparently there might be some giant American fair going on at your fairgrounds that I would imagine you'd run. I don't know who else would run it. So maybe you will have another job. Is there, what can you tell us anything about that? What might be happening or not happening?
You know, I really can't tell you anything about that because still to this date, there really have been no official conversations between President-elect Trump and his team and the Iowa State Fair. Obviously, you're referring to the Great American State Fair that President-elect Trump mentioned in a video clip, kind of his idea to celebrate America's 250th birthday in 2026. At this point, we're just, full speed ahead planning for the 2025 Iowa State Fair. And we know the 2026 Iowa State Fair, as most fairs will include, some nod to our country's 250th birthday, but no official conversations yet at this time regarding that event.
Well, but what you'd be running would essentially be a World's Fair, which we've had in other places. With different take on it, but essentially it would be because it would celebrate everything great from every state. And that'd be a heck of a thing to run, Jeremy. I mean, that would really be you thought the Iowa State Fair was going to be the cap of your career. That would be like even beyond that. I mean, I'm not even kidding. That's a serious and the opportunities it brings would just be because they'd really want the best of everything. It would be pretty unbelievable.
You look at the concept as was outlined by President-elect Trump. Yeah. Kind of this pavilions from every state and all sorts of things. The event side of me thinks, wow, that's an event I would want to go attend, kind of a world's fair of our country. But then the other, the practical hat comes on and says, that's a really big event to plan and not a lot of time. So I guess we're just kind of waiting and seeing, for lack of better words, but nothing official at this time.
Yeah, kind of like the Big E, they do five states and they have the buildings for each one, but do you make areas for each state and what do you bring for each one? Is it the whatever they've contributed to America over the years or special inventions they've made, or, do you move a Tesla factory onto the grounds or there's just so many possibilities of what you could do. And I don't know if it was necessarily, I didn't hear a whole lot about agricultural, but I was thinking more like industrial, things people, but maybe it is agricultural, maybe that a state that's their biggest contribution, but it would really be an incredible thing to learn about each state and what they do and how the heck do you drag people from Hawaii there and all those things. It would really be pretty amazing, to have that and would take creative mind because you really want the best of everything to be there for an event like that, I would think. So it could be a heck of a thing.
Yeah, it's fun to think about, that's for sure. Fun to dream about, how would each state be represented? But you're right, a lot of logistics. Yeah, one of which being, how do you get Hawaii? Yeah, here for sure. So,
and then you'd have a whole new board. That'd be tough.
Yeah,
it
would be interesting. Yeah, for sure. It'd be interesting.
That's good. But I think they said it was going to be year long if they were going to have it, right? Like a whole year?
I believe his statement, referred to, you're 100% right, a World's Fair type model of, several months, a year. That type of concept for sure.
I'm just thinking now, is this your plan to be the number one fair in the country on the list? I just caught that. I said, this is Jeremy's behind this. He wants to be number one.
Right, right. Yeah.
Houston, the Iowa State Fair plus be number one in the industry.
It would be a once in a lifetime thing for sure. Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool. It'd really be pretty cool. Well, we're coming back to the end of our hour, believe it or not. And I feel like we barely scratched the surface asking all these crazy questions. So what's ahead? What's your next steps at the Iowa State Fair right now? Do you have some things you're heading for right away?
Yeah,
I even asked you about the IFE and the new. You were the chairman of the executive search committee, weren't you? Oh my gosh, I gotta get back on for part two.
Yeah, it's been a busy year. Obviously, you know, finishing up my duties as a past chair of the IFE, leading the search committee to bring David Grindel to the IFE, and then a lot of projects here at the Iowa State Fair. We're in the middle of a multi-year renovation effort of our livestock barns, kind of a reminder of our cornerstone, all those buildings more than 100 years old. So it's been a busy year, that's for sure. It's been a busy year with a lot of different things going on both here with the Iowa State Fair and the IFE.
That's great. I'm looking forward to hoping to interview David Grindel soon with his bow tie. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, he just definitely brings an outside perspective, you know, to our industry. Lots of experience in the trade association world, which really is what the IFE is. And so we were blessed. So many great candidates, you know, for the position and David's expertise in government relations and advocacy, which I know is important, again, to our carnival partners. His expertise in that area, plus just that trade show or trade association experience, which of course includes trade shows, really made him the right candidate for the right time for the IFE.
I was just surprised you didn't hire the next person from the Ozark Empire Fair. No.
Well, I say you know your fair history. You know the industry history, the tradition there of the IFE in Springfield, and so
Strong.
You know, Marla's just raised the educational value of our association so much, and with the strong staff she had, it was a perfect opportunity to bring somebody in with some outside views, and again, much like a first-time fair goer, look at everything with a set of fresh eyes for sure.
Hopefully it'll be great, because you get none of the praise and all of the the beating up.
Right. So,
thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. It's been really, really interesting, and hopefully we'll have you back next year to see what's going on with the Iowa State Fair and your great World's Fair, whatever you're going to be running over there. Should be interesting. Thanks so much for all you do for the industry, and it was a pleasure.
Hey, thank you. Good to be with you, and this is one I won't have to watch again. I've already seen it, so I watch all your others, so I can take a break on this one.
You want to watch your own. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
This podcast is brought to you by Innovative Ticketing. Is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Our staff of professionals can guide you through your setup, assist with customer service, even on the weekends when you most need it, and help increase your sales through promotions that work. Innovative Ticketing is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Sign up today at innovativeticketing.com.